broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the greatest political podcast. And as I'm saying this, just realize this is our 10th year anniversary.
Today?
Today, episode 907 of I Doubt a Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined by the seasoned, grizzled veteran, Brittany Page, everybody.
Wow, 10 years today.
Yeah.
Okay.
March 11th, 2014.
Wow.
I was like scrambling because we hit record and then we let 35 seconds of silence happen. I was like, holy shit, it's the day.
Oh, wow.
Today, 10 years.
Well, first, let's just quickly get this out of the way. The biopsy results for me, for my colonoscopy, benign. No
nice.
Worries. All is good. Perfectly fine.
You're not going to try to... It was going to be a stolen cancer valor situation here.
Yeah, nope. Still, Jesse's the only one with the cancer situation.
Yes.
So, yeah, 10 years. Okay, I can't believe that we've been sitting down to talk about the news into microphones for 10 years.
Yeah.
And that we have built an audience that follows and listens to us talk about the news for 10 years. And that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is a thrilling thing. It is. Podcasting has kind of gone it started off as something new and interesting, and people started getting into it. And people got into it so much that it became kind of a joke that everybody's got a podcast. Mm-hmm. I think there's still a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But it's far more legitimate form of communication and entertainment, and infotainment than it once was.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would say by now we could consider ourselves having passed the test of time.
only because we made it to 10 years. Before this point,
yeah,
we had not passed.
No. I mean, obviously, I think 5 years in. Because, you know, pod fade is the thing. People, they don't realize how much goddamn work it's going to be. And then, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore.
Well, I think there's also some podcasts that are just designed to be short-term reporting type things that don't continue to be podcasts ongoing basis. But for the ones that do intend to be a podcast on an ongoing basis, yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about independent stuff like we do.
Right. Yeah. And and I don't know. I mean, I feel, like I said, lucky. And when we first started out, we didn't know what it was going to be. There are people that have listened to us from episode one, which... Shout out to those folks, because right. That was painful in the beginning. But originally we wanted to be in an atheist skeptic podcast because that's where we were. And we very quickly realized, I think maybe about 20 episodes in, that just wasn't going to be something that we want to talk about constantly.
Yeah.
And what we spent a lot of our time doing was talking about the news. And so we quickly shifted to talking about current events and politics, because those are things that we cared about anyway and seemed to be something that we could continue to talk about rather than like talking about how astrology isn't real. I mean, you can only
right.
talk about that.
Or psychics or whatever else.
Yeah, like you can't continue talking about that. So it pivoted pretty quickly. And yeah.
Well, a lot of that I attribute to having a phone number and listening to the audience, and when that wasn't really their thing.
Yeah.
And we, you know, if we would mention politics here or there, mention racism here or there, or white supremacy or whatever else, you know, that was right when the Donald Sterling, the owner of the Clippers, went through his insane period, and we started covering that, and people were interested.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just took off from there. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here we are.
So thank you all for being along for the ride. We would not be able to do this without you, and we certainly would not do it without you, because we rely on the listeners and the listener communication, certainly, to
and we
do
can
the
talk
show.
About politics as we do off pod. We don't need to have microphones to talk about politics.
Yeah, but it's nice to get other perspectives.
Yes.
And I guess now is a good time to read some recent reviews. We don't do that a lot, but we do get reviews on these pod apps.
Yeah, so, Apple Podcast, and I think even Spotify. We don't pay attention to them as much anymore.
Yeah, I think you can rate on Spotify, maybe. I don't know if you can write reviews. This actually brings up an important point, because someone on Patreon, a Patreon supporter, recently messaged us and said, is there a link to an RSS feed that I can put into my podcatcher? And I responded and gave the directions on how to do that. So if you are a Patreon supporter, you have access to the RSS feed link so that you can have the ad-free show
right in your podcatcher.
Right, play in your podcatcher. So if you have questions about how to do that, you can just pop into like the Patreon Q&A, or even just Google. I think what I put into Google was Patreon, how to access RSS feed. And then I just poked around. So we got a recent review, and it is a 3-star review.
Oh, they're not celebrating our 10-year anniversary?
They're not, no, oh. No. Oh. And it's a 3 out of 5-star review, so not great, okay? And the title of the review says...
I mean, that's a restaurant we would probably avoid.
If I'm pulling up a restaurant on Yelp and it has 3 stars, I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I'm starting to revise that, because Yelp is terrorism and people write reviews for things that are not worthy of like 1-star ratings. Like a customer service issue will happen, and they'll say like the hostess was rude, and they give a 1-star to a restaurant. It's like 1-star for a restaurant is for hair in your food, a torn glove in your mouth when you're eating Indian food and it's delicious and all you want is to enjoy your delicious Indian food takeout, and then you
these
find out
these are real things
you're
that have
chewing on a glove
to us.
Okay.
Yeah. A rubber glove, like a kitchen rubber glove. You also, like hotels, people give 1-star.
Oh my God. It's the worst, because so when you're talking about hotels,
see, this is, listen, this could be What Grinds My Gears podcast, and just let Brittany just wind her up and fucking let her go.
No, because so if you look at these fucking reviews for hotels, and these people are giving 1-star.
Is he fucking listening to himself right now?
1-star reviews for hotel. Again, it's for bloody sheets and bed bugs. There's no other reason that you should be giving 1-star reviews for a hotel unless there's bloody sheets, bed bugs, a murder attempt. I don't know. Something serious. Not for, they forgot to give me my cookie when I checked into the hotel.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, these people. It's ridiculous. So you can't trust it.
By the way, I don't know if we've ever had bed bugs. Well, we've had certainly bugs in the bed that time in Nashville.
I woke up with a roach on my chest.
Yeah, the roach was so big that it still had its saddle on from whoever rode the roach into the hotel. Thank you for that, Brittany. And we also have had blood in the sheets upon checking in.
Yeah, again, all of these are based on
thanks
personal
a lot,
experiences.
Grove Hotel, Boise, Idaho.
Okay, so anyway, back to this review. 3 out of 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. The title: self-centered.
This podcast has too much blood in the sheets.
Self-centered point of view. And this is from Dr. DK2. I was disappointed to hear you discuss the limiting of pushing political content via algorithm on Meta. You only looked at it from your perspectives as, quote, content creator, and totally ignored the negative impact it has on our society as a whole. It's been shown that especially young white males are radicalized via these algorithms, that people get sucked into QAnon conspiracy theories because of the algorithm. So you two look pretty small from here, only concerned about your reach. Hashtag sad.
Hashtag in a review?
I don't think they know that the hashtag thing doesn't work. Like, you can't click on hashtag sad and see all the sad reviews on Apple Podcasts.
It's not a tweet, doctor. Well, one, I would say this, that it's a little bit one-sided and myopic, this point of view, because just as people are certainly, what they're saying is correct, are led astray into dangerous points of view from social media, they are also led out of those views.
Exactly.
And if those views are not also presented, There will be no. That will take away one way to extricate these people who have been radicalized. So, all right. I wear your 3-star review as a badge of honor, Doctor.
We're actually going to read an email that is going to illustrate your point here in a bit, but...
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. And I think this is funny. Out of all of the things that we've talked about, out of all of the things that we have said, out of all of the things that we could say that make people upset or angry, this is the one that gets us a halfway negative Apple Podcasts review. So if you want to help counter this 3-star review that we got, feel free to review us on whatever podcatcher it is that you use to listen to the show. And we would very much appreciate that.
Make them funny. I love the funny ones.
All right. We want to give a shout out to our new Patreon supporters before we get into the listener communication portion of the show. So thank you to our new Patreon supporters, Talia S.
Talia S.
Tina G.
Tina G.
Patrick M.
Patrick M.
Karen.
Karen.
I think this one.
Is that going to have to be isolated now?
Sorry. I don't know what happened. That turned into a not prepared situation. I'm trying to figure out what to say about this. So I'm
not prepared.
I think that this is. I don't. You know what? Whatever. Just. Okay.
Just read the goddamn name.
I'm not prepared.
Okay. C.A. Basque.
C.A. Basque.
I don't know if it's California Basque. I don't know if it's because it's all together.
Yeah,
so
Cabasque.
It just really, okay, yeah, sure. Christine O.
Christine O.
And then we want to give a shout out to Dennis S.
Dennis S.
Dennis S. for increasing the pledge. Looks like became an annual Patreon.
That is awesome.
Which is an option for you as well. You get 10% off of your member price when you become an annual member. So thank you very much for that. And now we are going to read an
email. There's one more.
10 years, everybody. This is how good you get after 10 years.
This is it.
Okay. So we have an email here from Anonymous. Hi, Jesse and Brittany. It doesn't seem like that long ago that I found your shows through the YouTube algorithms, but I'm glad I did.
Wait. The algorithm? Is that what you were talking about? That particular line?
No. It's gonna get better to challenge Dr. DK2 or whatever.
The algorithm delivered our content? Oh, what a myopic and selfish view that we have about that. Ha ha!
I found Jesse first, the Dollamore Daily, and then started listening to I Doubt It. Jesse, your religious background and insights on current evangelicals and politics really struck a chord as I was looking for someone to explain why these quote-unquote Christians are so out of step with what I understand and believe the Bible actually teaches. I know you currently consider yourself to be an atheist, and I believe in God, but I still find value in what you say and how you present it. Recently, you did a show on the recent North Carolina Republican gubernatorial primary, and I was shocked and horrified. I voted in the Democratic primary and had not heard too much about the candidates. I'm literally scared to think this man could be voted in as our governor. It hits home even more than Trump being president again. I wondered if you could talk about this story, also from North Carolina. And then there's a link here, and it says how conservative activist Michelle Morrow pulled off a major upset in her quest to run North Carolina public schools. This also scares me, knowing there are people in North Carolina who actually believe these types of things should be running things. I feel scared when I see pro-Trump signs around my neighborhood. Full disclosure, I voted for Trump in 2016.
Oh, wow.
And I have regretted it ever since. Being raised in a conservative Christian home, I thought I should vote for the pro-life candidate who seemed to be most aligned with Christian values. I'm also originally from Alabama and moved to North Carolina 21 years ago because my sister lives here and my mom was from here. I'm ashamed of the things Alabama has been in the news for over the past several years since I left. I never believed that America was a Christian nation from the beginning, but I did try to vote for leaders who most closely aligned with my beliefs. But since 2016, my beliefs have slowly changed, as I have learned more from listening to shows such as yours, especially since January 6th. I am getting emotional, weirdly. I think it's because of the Taking Care of Biz segment that I just planned for the show, and it, like, primed the pump.
Huh, yeah.
But also, anyway, I'll talk about it. I voted blue in 2020 and 2022, and will in 2024. Thank you for reading this and everything you and Brittany do. I love the I Doubt It show that you do together too. And I have had things I wanted to say over the past several months, but this was so upsetting to me that I had to send this in as soon as possible. Anonymous.
So I'll give you a moment here to gather yourself or whatever. This Mark Robinson character who's running for governor in North Carolina and has been chosen by the Republican Party in North Carolina to be their guy.
Also the lieutenant governor.
Yeah, right, he's the current lieutenant governor. And look, I'm going to say some things here, and that's not an indictment of candidates who like don't have a degree. That's not important. I don't think that's a requisite. It doesn't mean you're not smart. But this is a guy who just doesn't have any education. He doesn't have any experience in politics or governance. He's just a bigot who got up at a city council or a county commissioner meeting and rambled about guns being taken away. And then kind of rose to fame and prominence from that moment. And now he's a guy who denies the Holocaust. He's a bigot. He's a racist. He's one of the worst of the worst out there. He's like a black version of Donald Trump. And he has captured the attention of Republican weirdos in North Carolina so much that he's looking to be the governor of the state. And look, I think that it's kind of a gift, because it does set such a stark juxtaposition between the candidates. It doesn't mean it's not perilous that he might get elected. It certainly is. But I think that he's going to be defeated. I would tell the emailer that, you know, rest assured, the people of North Carolina, and there are some good and decent people in the state, are going to see this, even people who were Trump people in 2016 and maybe 2020, are going to like, nah, this is a bridge too far. We've seen the error of our ways, much like the emailer has, and they're not going to go this way. That would be my prediction.
Yeah. So thank you for giving me that time. So I don't want to discount when I said I was getting emotional and I was like, I think it's because of I planned the show and got the Taking Care of Biz clap. I'm not trying to discount the email from Anonymous here. I'm just saying I was emotional because I had gotten this clip and it primed the pump, and so it's easier for me to get emotional right now. But what made me emotional was that everything has felt so turbulent and tense, and even in our listener communication that we've been getting recently because of the upcoming election and people don't want to vote for Joe Biden, and some people are mad that we're not being positive enough about Joe Biden, and some people think we're not being critical enough, and it has just felt kind of nightmarish lately. And this email was a good reminder that there are still people out there who can change their minds. And I think we think of people who voted for Trump and we think that they will never come around, and we see Jordan Klepper interviewing them at Trump rallies and we're like, dear Lord, these people are so far gone, they can't be reached. And it's just nice to know that that's not always the case. And I think we lose sight of that when we are only consuming that kind of content, and we lose sight of the fact that it is possible that people can and do change. And that's really something that we work on here, because we are people who have had to work really hard at changing. And you know, it's not something that we shame people for. It's not something that we attack people for. We want people to grow and change. And that's what motivates us asking the question of every guest that we interview at the end of the interview, is what's the most recent thing you changed your mind about? We should all of us, never stop trying to learn and update our views and continue to grow. I am horrified by the things, like when Facebook shows me my memories of like posts that I made 10 years ago, I'm like, dear Lord, thank God for the growth that has happened here. You know, not that they're like offensive or things like that, but just dumb, you know, just dumbness. And I'm just happy to hear from someone that that has gone through that change.
Yeah, I've been noticing it more and more, and it's something I talk about on YouTube more and more, is that I know there's people out there like, oh, all the Trumpers, it's all this monolith, and they're never going to change. But I get enough communication. I mean, hundreds of voicemails, hundreds of emails, sometimes per day from people. And there is a large contingent of Trump people, people who voted for him in 2016, certainly, maybe a smaller proportion who voted for him in 2020, who aren't going to be that way this time. And when you hear polls, when these polls are wrong, poll after poll after poll are just getting it wrong about Trump this time around, I would give people some hope in that there are more reasonable people out there than you think, and it's not sexy for the media to cover it, but I think we're looking like we're in good shape. We're all going to have to get out there and vote to ensure that the worst possible scenario doesn't happen. But I'm hopeful. I'm positive. I'm optimistic. Yeah. So thank you for that email. I hope that it does serve to assuage some people's trepidation that they have going into this next election. We appreciate it very much. Let's move on to a voicemail from Anonymous.
Hey, Jesse and Brittany and Sweepy, of course. So I've been thinking about the 2024 election, and what do you think would be better for your show as far as for shares, views, clicks, additional members, if Trump wins and you cover the disaster that his next presidency will be, or if Biden wins, especially a solid win, like in 2020, and then you get to cover the collective MAGAs losing their goddamn minds, Trump losing his goddamn mind, and a conspiracy and everything else to follow. I honestly think Biden winning would be better for your show, but that's just me. Let me know what you guys think. Love your show. Peace and long life.
This is a great question. This is a question we get actually a lot. It's actually a question we just got together with David Pakman when he was in town. And it was something that we talked about because he also gets this communication a lot. Mm-hmm. And let me just, spoiler alert, we don't care what the better option would be because we want what's best for the country. We did in 2016. We certainly did in 2020. And going into 2024, we want the best thing. I think, though, that if I'm just going to flatly answer the question, it would be better financially and for the show if Trump was to be elected. But who fucking cares about that? When democracy is on the line, when the literal future of this nation is at stake, that's what's most important. When hundreds of millions, you know, over 100 million women's bodily autonomy and healthcare choices, reproductive healthcare choices, hang in the balance. People's freedom, people's citizenship, free speech, democracy itself, these are all concepts that are on the line with whether, if Donald Trump gets elected again. So the answer to the question, and it's an interesting one, We are working against our own best interest to try to stave off another Trump presidency, because also, who knows what would happen? We live in Washington, D.C. If Donald Trump again lives blocks away from where we're broadcasting right now, where we're recording right now, who knows what he's going to bring with him, what kind of an element he's going to bring, what kind of policies he's going to bring to squelch our First Amendment rights and imprison his enemies, bring this retribution that he's been talking about for over a year now. That's scary.
And we're going to talk more about that, given his meeting with Viktor Orban at Mar-a-Lago this past week. I think of it from a mental health perspective, because sometimes it's very difficult to plan the show and sift through all the clips, and sometimes it's difficult to be as connected to the constant flow of news, information, political stuff that we have chosen to be connected to and immersed in. Sometimes it's difficult, and it has a negative impact on our mental health, and that can make doing the show pretty difficult.
Yeah.
And we want the show to be, we know we're talking about stuff that's important and can
heavy.
Yeah, and it can be heavy, but we also want the show to be something that people enjoy listening to, that they want to listen to, that has levity and funny moments and isn't just constant terror and onslaught of negativity. Because
Donald Trump, baby!
That's why we got the drops.
It can be easy for it to take a turn to negative town. And we want to keep it as much as possible in a manageable place where we feel like we still have agency and we can control things.
A manageable place called Positive Town.
Yeah.
Not sure. Negative Town.
Sure. So this is a question we get a lot. We appreciate this voicemail because it was asked in a very direct way and it allowed us to answer in a direct way. And
well, can I also speak to that very quickly?
Yeah.
I like that because we don't play the games, and this isn't like a commercial for rah-rah, look at us, we're so great and unique, but we don't play the games that some other quote-unquote, like the reviewer gave us, content creators. We don't play some of the games. We don't do the audience capture. If you guys are interested in things like anti-vax conspiracies, that's not what we do. We're not into that. That's wrong. We're going to tell the truth as we see it. And if we lose audience members, as we have in the past, in several spates of climactic drop-offs of support financially, whether it be taking Sam Harris to task, we lost a bunch of support. Talking about trans issues and trans rights being human rights, we lost a bunch of support. We don't play the game where we go along with wherever the audience is.
Well, and I think, honestly, we shot ourselves in the foot on this a little bit just by having listener communication, because I don't know a lot of shows that do that with their audience, and it sets up a situation where this happens quite frequently, okay? A Patreon supporter joins. They send us a comment about the show that they're unhappy with something. We respond to it. They don't like how we responded to it.
Yeah.
And they delete their pledge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're not like, oh no, we should have been kid gloves. We should have been like, well, that's
a very... And by we, I think you mean me.
Well, that's a very good point. And we, yes, we will, you know, we're not going to do that. We're going to be a genuine disagreement, whatever it might be. You might be more of a dick than you should be, certainly,
well,
but
also, let me say this. Listen, if you started giving on Patreon, and I don't want this to be about financially supporting the show. That's not what this is about. But if you started giving on Patreon because of my fiery nature and my passion, and then you get angry because that fiery nature and passion struck you in a way you didn't like, well, then I don't know what to tell you. These aren't fucking characters we're doing here. You know, this is, I'm a kind of a bombastic jerk off in real life. And, you know, even my friends get uncomfortable sometimes.
So thank you for the listener communication.
Yes.
We very much appreciate it. If you would like to leave a voicemail, you can call 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Dollamocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
Nancy Mace made an appearance on This Week. Is it This Week with George Stephanopoulos? That might not be the name of the show. Don't know. It's on ABC. It's one of the Sunday shows.
Right.
But with George Stephanopoulos.
Well, it's not Meet the Press. It's not. It might be This Week. What's the other one?
There's a lot of Sunday shows. And so Nancy Mace is currently a representative from South Carolina.
Yeah.
And Nancy Mace is one of these Republicans who doesn't have any principles.
Rudderless. And, absolutely rudderless.
And will say one thing and then another, depending on how the wind is blowing that day. You just really can't pin her down on anything. It's really hard to know where she stands.
I mean, after the insurrection, Donald Trump is responsible for this. He should be held responsible. This is a terrible evil and a crime against the country. And then she's out in front of Trump Tower begging for his endorsement or faking as though he did endorse. I mean, she's just no principles whatsoever.
And part of this is there have been staffers that have given interviews and said that she loves to be on camera. She wants to be getting as much attention as possible, doing as many interviews as possible.
Didn't she? There was a quote out there from a former staffer that during the insurrection, she wanted to go out there to get punched in the face by a insurrectionist so she could parlay that into internet clout.
Yeah, so this is someone who's, I mean, pretty unhinged. And
I would say.
And one part of her background is that she's a survivor of sexual assaults. And she has talked about this in relation to her positions on things like abortion rights. And it comes up as she is talking about her positions on various things. And so during her appearance with George Stephanopoulos, he decided to ask her about this history in the context of endorsing Donald Trump for president after, of course, we all know he has been found liable in the civil trial with E. Jean Carroll, found liable for rape.
Yes, this morning. And you've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George, and I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about Donald
Trump. No, you
Trump.
Are shaming
You've
me.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame, and you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting. And quite frankly, E. Jean Carroll's comments when she did get the judgment, joking about what she was going to buy, it makes it harder for women to come forward when they make a mockery out of rape, when they joke about it.
Doesn't it make it harder for women to come forward when they...
It makes it harder when other women joke about it, and she's joked about it. I find it offensive, and I also find it offensive that you're trying to shame me with this question.
I'm not trying to shame you.
You are.
Well, in fact,
I have dealt with this for 30 years. You know how hard it was to tell my story 5 years ago when they were doing a fetal heartbeat bill and there were no exceptions for rape, incest, rape or incest in there? I had to tell my story because no other woman was coming forward.
I'm just asking.
No rape victims were represented. And you're trying to shame me this morning.
I'm just asking.
And I find it offensive. And this is why women won't come forward.
Women won't come forward because they're defamed by those who perpetrate rape. Donald
Trump. They are judged and they're shamed, and you're trying to shame me this morning.
I think it's disgusting. I'm not shaming you at all. I
told
you
my story. It took me 25 years to tell my story. I was judged for it. I still get judged for it today.
I'm asking you a very simple question.
So, of course, Nancy Mace is not being shamed by George Stephanopoulos.
In any way.
She's in a position of power. She has the ability to influence policy, and she is using her position of power to support someone who has been found liable for rape. And
it seems like an incongruent position to hold, and he's just asking her about it.
Of course. And listen, I'm of the position that this question should actually be asked of everyone who's supporting Donald Trump. You don't need to be a survivor of rape to be asked this question. I think Lindsey Graham should be asked this question. I think Ted Cruz should be asked this question. Every person who's making the rounds talking about how great of a guy Donald Trump is should be asked this question, not just survivors of rape. But it is strange that Nancy Mace, being a survivor of rape, having that history in her background, chooses to talk about how E. Jean Carroll has responded to her own rape.
Yeah.
Saying that joking about it is wrong and that it makes it harder for women to come forward when they joke about it. Actually, I think any survivor of any trauma can choose to respond to that trauma in whatever way they see fit. If E. Jean Carroll feels comfortable joking about it, and that is something that helps her cope
or ease the fucking trauma
Right. And so, she made that joke about how she was going to spend the money. I think it was when she was on with Rachel Maddow in the aftermath of the second judgment that was given. And as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, no, this is going to be played on all of the conservative stations. This is going to be attacked. Of course, Megyn Kelly tweeted about it immediately. Right. All the usual suspects. So I knew that this was going to be a go-to line, but it is disappointing to hear it from someone who, like Nancy Mace, is a survivor.
Yeah.
And this kind of went back and forth for a long time. We're not going to play the entire thing because seriously, it's just like 5 minutes of them arguing and Nancy Mace saying the same thing.
Well, she's using a rhetorical device here where she's like, well, it's not even a device. It's just a fucking bully tactic where she won't shut the fuck up and let a dialogue happen. She's just constantly saying how she's being shamed, how she's being ratcheted down and squelched and silenced and all of this nonsense. Just talk to try to win the argument. And if you're doing that, you've lost.
Yeah, and so this is going to be the last clip that we play of it, but I thought that this exchange represented something that media figures should do more often.
Judge. Guilty of doing.
He defended himself over that and denies that it ever happened, but he was not found guilty in a criminal court of law. It was a civil judgment.
So is that the distinction you're making?
Abuse.
A civil judgment is okay, but a criminal judgment
is
not?
This is different, and they didn't even input all of the evidence into the civil case either, because some of the information she provided wasn't even accurate or correct. But to sit here and ask me as a rape victim to try to shame me for my political choices is wrong, and I think it's offensive.
You can repeat that again and again.
I find it deeply offensive.
You don't find it offensive that Donald Trump has been found liable for rape?
I find it offensive as a rape victim that you're trying to shame me for my political choices. And I've said again repeatedly, E. Jean Carroll has made a mockery out of rape by joking about it. I don't find that funny. Well, rape is not funny.
You've made it
rape
perfectly
is serious.
Clear. You've made it perfectly clear.
Rape
you're comfortable.
Is serious.
It is
it's
serious.
Not
see what
funny.
She's doing.
And it shouldn't be made a mockery of. But if you want to defend a woman who made a mockery out of rape, then you go ahead and do that. I'm not going to do that.
Well, actually, what you're doing is defending a man who's been found liable for rape. I don't understand how you can do that.
Not in a criminal court of law. This was a civil judgment over sexual abuse, not rape, by the way, and she made a mockery out of it.
Can we pull
so
up
which
the
one
Washington
are you
Post
going
headline
to?
Right there? In fact, it has been shown to be rape. The judge affirmed that it was in fact rape. Donald Trump was found to have committed rape. That's just a fact.
That is a civil judgment, not a criminal court. They're two very different things, and you know better.
Well, I just showed you the facts.
You
right
know
here.
Better.
You show that you're very comfortable with what Donald Trump has done.
And what you've done is offensive to women who've been raped. What you've done this morning is offensive.
We'll let the viewers decide about that. Let's talk about.
So this is
finally a good performance by somebody in the media.
Yeah, it's perfect. This is absolutely what needs to be done to every single person who's supporting Donald Trump, because like we talked about when we were setting up the clip, Nancy Mace is someone who will say whatever she needs to say, and it's tough to really pin her down on what she believes, and this is an example of it. And obviously, she's now saying this because she has to. She's supporting Donald Trump. She has to defend it in any way she can. And you heard all of the tropes coming out.
Well, listen, Brittany, she's making a good point. It's not rape. It's sexual abuse. Totally cool. Sexual abuse, A-OK with Nancy Mace. Rape, I don't know.
And even saying it's a civil issue, not a criminal issue, as though there needs to be like criminal charges before it's taken seriously. So it's wildly disturbing to see something like this. And I'm sure we're going to continue to see many more examples of this, but hopefully when we do see examples of Republicans showing that they don't have principles, we will also see media figures challenging them on that. And there was actually another good example of this, shockingly, on CNN and shockingly with David Axelrod.
Right.
But
he's been taking some L's lately.
In the aftermath of the State of the Union address, which everyone universally recognizes is a very strong performance from President Joe Biden.
Even Republicans recognize it as a strong performance, so much so that they accused Joe Biden of being on drugs. The only way he could have performed this outstanding is by being high on something. I mean, that's ultimately the take.
Yeah, and there was a moment where during the speech, President Biden was talking about how Republicans backed away from the immigration deal at the behest of Donald Trump. And there was a very conservative member of Congress who was sitting there. The camera was on him. I believe his name is James Lankford.
Yeah.
And
Senator from Oklahoma.
And he was nodding his head saying that's true about what President Biden was saying about his fellow Republicans.
And by the way, James Lankford isn't a Mitt Romney type. He is a radical Republican.
And so there was this moment on CNN where they're doing, you know, the after game wrap up report or whatever for the State of the Union. And they have the Democratic commentators, the Democrat commentators, and the Republican commentators. And David Axelrod is going to be the one who starts here. And then we're going to hear our favorite, Scott Jennings, the Republican, come in. And he's going to start talking about the immigration deal. And I really love what David Axelrod does with Scott Jennings here.
James Lankford is, in fact, one of the most conservative members of Congress. He spent months assiduously negotiating what would have been the strictest border bill in decades. And then it was tanked. And it was tanked, as the president said, because Donald Trump wanted it tanked. So he knew this moment was going to elicit a response. And he wanted to say exactly what he said.
But it has nothing to do with the current problem and how we got here over the last 3 years. On day one, reversing all of Donald Trump's immigration policies by executive action, and the idea that after 3 years of telling the American people the border was secure, after having unleashed this on the American people, on the exec, and then saying, well, we didn't pass the bill, so it's all their fault. It's not.
No, I understand that you feel like it. You feel, and you're probably right, this is a good issue for Republicans. But the public actually wants answers to it. This was an answer, and Trump tanked it.
Do you think the public believes Joe Biden has the answers?
I think the public believes that the bill, I think if they saw the details of the bill and its particulars, they would say, yeah, those are good things, and we ought to do that. And in fact, you would have said that, too, if you were if you were asked about this before it became an issue that Trump pulled the ripcord on.
Scott, the whole time Joe Biden has been president.
I wanted to play that so you could imagine in your mind that Scott Jennings had nothing to say to that, and he didn't respond.
Yeah.
But, and it's almost like we were talking about this the other day, because Jesse and I get into joke-offs in the car, especially, and I fumbled my words a bit when I was doing my joke off, which immediately ruined. I lost, because as soon as you like fumble your words, for some reason,
this is
just like a rule of comedy. Okay.
Well, we also do the thing where if one of us stumbles a word, we switch straight to Arrested Development with the Job Bluth. Oh, shoot. Should the guy in the $4,000 suit? Come on.
Yeah. So. So this happened to David Axelrod at the end a little bit there, where he was struggling to get it out in the way that he could have been more forceful, is what I'm trying to say. He could have said, and you would have been for this too if it wasn't for you taking your talking points from Donald Trump.
And you can't, listen, Republicans can't get away from the fact that Donald Trump, as David Axelrod said, pulled the ripcord on this. Donald Trump admits it himself. It's because of him.
Yeah.
He's taking credit for having tanked this. They have a bill. They don't want it because they want to campaign on this issue. So they've kicked the can down the road very publicly. There was a solution. There is a bill that they torpedoed in order to give Donald Trump something to campaign on going into the future. Come on.
Yeah. And like we said, the universal response to the State of the Union was that it was a very strong performance from Joe Biden. Of course, there's been a lot of concerns about his age and his ability to convince the public that he is capable of running for re-election, capable of winning re-election, and capable of serving another term as president. And for a lot of people, it seems to be reassuring that he came out, gave a lengthy speech, did very well, was forceful in his rebuke, even going off the cuff in a lot of exchanges with Republicans who were responding in the moment during the State of the Union. There were, of course, some things that I didn't appreciate. I didn't like the moment when he responded to Marjorie Taylor Greene and talked about the quote-unquote illegal. I don't like that he continues to refuse to use the word abortion. This is an ongoing problem with Joe Biden. He prefers reproductive freedom. He prefers any other term but abortion. But I do think it is reassuring to see him continuing his strong performance as he goes out and is on the campaign trail.
Yeah.
And there was an example of it when he was in Philadelphia, where he is now challenging Trump directly on things like Roe v. Wade.
She scheduled treatments to have a second child, but the Alabama Supreme Court shut down IVF treatments. Across the state, unleashed by the U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. She was told her dream would have to wait. What her family has gone through should never have happened. And folks, do you know why it happened? I'll tell you why. One reason, Donald Trump. He came to office determined to overturn Roe v. Wade. In fact, he's bragged about it repeatedly, that he's the reason it got overturned. He got his wish. And states are passing bans, criminalizing doctors, forcing rape and incest victims to leave their state to get care. And now MAGA Republicans and Donald Trump want to pass a national ban on the right to choose, period.
Well, so when Brittany talks about the choice of words that Biden's using, some people out there will say, well, it's just a coincidence that he's not using the word abortion. And one, Brittany and I are of like mind here. He should be using it. It's a winning issue. He should be using the word abortion. And I don't know if it's because of his personally held beliefs that are somewhat informed by his religion. I don't know. But it is intentional for this reason, and I say it, because during the State of the Union, he didn't use Donald Trump's name one time. He referred to Donald Trump maybe a dozen or more times, but referred to him as my predecessor. So that is a non-political event, quote unquote, because it's the State of the Union address. And then when he's the next day or the day after that, when he's on the campaign trail, he's using Donald Trump's name. So it's by design from the campaign, the campaign consultants, or maybe Joe Biden himself, to use the specific language that he uses. And I think, as Brittany has expressed, I think it's a mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
And he needs to be more forceful. But this is a moment. This is good. Calling out Donald Trump, pointing to the record, exactly talking about what the facts are on the ground.
Absolutely. And we're starting to see a Joe Biden from the past emerge. The Joe Biden that people loved when he had his aviators on, eating ice cream and yeah, flashing his toothy grin. The Joe Biden that was flying under the radar, that people generally liked. And then when you become president and there's more pressure on you and more spotlight on you, and then people yeah, see the ways that you are failing them, then they start to not like you as much. But he released a new campaign ad.
Pretty good.
That was, like I said, reminiscent of this Joe Biden I think a lot of people remember.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. I led the country through the COVID crisis. Today, we have the strongest economy in the world. I passed a law that lowers prescription drug prices. Caps insulin at $35 a month for seniors. For 4 years, Donald Trump tried to pass an infrastructure law, and he failed. I got it done. Now we're rebuilding America. I passed the biggest law in history to combat climate change because our future depends on it. Donald Trump took away the freedom of women to choose. I'm determined to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people, and that's what I'm doing. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Can we do one more take?
Look, I'm very young, energetic, and handsome. What the hell am I doing this for?
It's good. And then you didn't see it because it's audio, but there's like him kind of side-eyeing the camera with the cute, you know, we're in on this joke. It was good. A very, very effective ad. I think it could be more effective, and I hope getting closer to the election that he starts pulling out all of the stops. It's great to differentiate yourself on policy from your opponent, certainly. That's normal run-of-the-mill politics that has gone down for generation after generation. What we face here is a different kind of politician, a different set of threats. And Joe Biden needs to be highlighting the more existential differences between these two men. He needs to say, look, I'm not a guy who's having dinner with fucking Nazis in my house. That's Donald Trump. I'm not the guy who's cavorting with dictators and autocrats all across the globe, inviting them into their home, his home, which is what exactly happened this last weekend. These distinctions need to be made forcefully and clearly for the American people and for that portion of the population who might be on the fence and might come the other way and vote against Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I want to say before we move on to the Viktor Orbán stuff that people might be listening to this that have heard us be critical about Joe Biden's policy positions, and they're like, wow, they're playing this ad where he's like being cute and saying that it's good. So the reason that that's good is because a lot of people run on vibes. Like a lot of people that are going to vote in the election get a vibe for someone that they like or don't like, and then that drives the decision. You see it in a lot of these man on the street interviews where people cannot name a single policy from the person that they are supporting. They can't name a single one. It's just vibes. They just go off vibes. And so there needs to be some of that for the general public, who currently a significant number disapprove of Joe Biden's performance. There needs to be more of this type of thing so that the people who run off vibes can be convinced that he has some positive vibes.
Yeah, listen, I obviously came out of it not necessarily criticizing, because I think it's a good ad. It's an effective ad. Now, let's just talk about what the reality is on the fucking ground here. But I am also criticized. I want to see more people pointing out that Donald Trump cavorts with actual fucking Nazis. I mean, it's great that you got an infrastructure deal done. Love it. It's going to revitalize. It's going to impact the economy. It's going to be great. But Donald Trump's having dinner with Nazis. I mean, come the fuck on.
Yes, let's talk about that more.
Yes.
So you said Donald Trump loves autocrats. Perfect example of this with Viktor Orban, the Hungarian prime minister, going to Mar-a-Lago, came to Washington and did not go to the White House, did not meet with the actual people who are in the government.
Right.
He met with the Heritage Foundation.
The 2025 people.
Yeah, Project 2025. And again, if you haven't watched the Project 2025 video that we did, we wrote it. It's a long form video, and definitely go and watch that on Jesse's YouTube channel. You can just find it by putting into the search.
Dalimore 2025.
Exactly. Yeah. So this Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban, is a dangerous guy, and there was a recent appearance from Anne Applebaum, who is a staff writer for The Atlantic, a Pulitzer Prize winning historian. She has a new book coming out, Twilight of Democracy, The Seductive Lure of Authoritarianism. And she recently gave this summary of Viktor Orban when she made a news appearance, and I thought maybe it was the best way to kind of give people a flavor if they're unaware of who exactly Viktor Orban is.
So what's important about Orban is that he was democratically elected. Hungary was a democracy. It's still a member of NATO. It's still a member of the European Union. Orban had popular support. He won a big election victory, actually. But what matters is what he did after he won. And he then began to systematically, piece by piece, dismantle the institutions of democracy. And he did so without... In his case, he did so at first without breaking the law. He changed the constitution because he had a constitutional majority. He altered the judges. He began doing some things behind the scenes. So, for example, he played around with the press. People who advertised in the opposition press suddenly had trouble getting government contracts. And because Hungary is a small country, he also began to dominate the economy, making sure that his businessmen, his oligarchs, stayed ahead. And by doing so over a number of years, he made himself impossible to remove from power. And that is now the model of democratic takeover. You know, when you want to destroy a democracy nowadays, you don't have a coup d'etat. You don't need to send the tanks into the presidential palace and shoot up the ceiling. What you do is you take it apart piece by piece, and others have copied him. The Poles, the previous Polish government attempted to copy him. They didn't quite succeed, and they lost an election in October. The Israeli government has tried to copy him, and that was actually the big story in Israel last summer before the Gaza war began. It's not that different from what Hugo Chavez did in Venezuela. This isn't necessarily a right-wing process. It can also be a left-wing process. But watch what he has, not what he says. I mean, what he says about LGBT rights or about migration is horrific, but it's not so much that. Those are the games that he plays to keep your eye away from the ball. And what matters is what he does to the judges, what he does to the civil service, what he does to the media.
And so it should alarm you that he's not meeting with President Biden or official government channels. He's going to the Heritage Foundation, which is the rallying point the informational organizational point for Project 2025, which in summation, she just outlined what Project 2025 is.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
taking the government apart piece by piece.
Yes.
Appointing the people that will do their bidding. That's absolutely what Project 2025 is.
Yes.
And what's concerning right now, actually, is there's leftists online that have called Project 2025 a conspiracy.
Yeah, Bree Newsom. What the fuck?
When you can go, it's not a conspiracy theory. You can go and you can download a several hundred page book that outlines the mandate for leadership.
From the Heritage Foundation's website.
And it tells you everything about what Project 25 is and what they hope to do.
Again, go just Google Dollamore Project 2025. And if you don't want to watch the video, great. Scroll to the bottom of the description, and there's a link to this PDF. You can read it your fucking self.
Yeah, and it's really dangerous to talk about it as though it's a conspiracy theory, as though it's a pipe dream, because Donald Trump wants to be Viktor Orban. Donald Trump wants nothing more than to be put in a position of power again and to never relinquish that power ever again.
People have referred to Viktor Orban as Trump before Trump.
Yeah, and people will talk about how people that are autocratic, people who have autocratic tendencies like Donald Trump does, are more dangerous the second time they're in power because they have learned the lessons, the mistakes that they made the first time, and that they aren't going to make those mistakes again. Like, for example, Donald Trump had people in his cabinet that wouldn't remain loyal to him no matter what happened.
Right. Well, he certainly in a second go round, he's not going to keep Christopher Wray as FBI director like he did with Comey. There are several, his attorney general isn't going to be a Jeff Sessions or a Bill Barr. It's going to be someone who is absolutely a brown-nosing sycophant who's going to do whatever he says. No questions asked.
And so you just heard the summary of who Viktor Orban is as a person. Here's Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago during this meeting, after this meeting, talking about what he likes about him.
There's nobody that's better, smarter, or a better leader than Viktor Orban. He's fantastic. As you know, the Prime Minister of Hungary, and does a great job. He's a non-controversial figure because he said this is the way it's going to be and that's the end of it, right? He's the boss. And you know, he's a great leader, fantastic leader in Europe and all over the world.
Other than the great soundtrack in the background.
Yeah, Sam and Dave.
Yeah. he's a non-controversial leader. What?
Well, and that's because that's what Donald Trump wants. He says what he wants and it's done.
Right.
He's a boss. That's what Donald Trump wishes he was. That's mm-hmm. what he wants. He wants to surround himself who will do what he says. This is his goal. And there's new reporting out actually today because a CNN reporter, Jim Sciutto, wrote a book. And so we're getting some new reporting.
What information did he sit on while he was writing his book?
Alleged praise for Hitler from Donald Trump.
Right.
Yes.
Certainly information that we should sit on and not give right away. And, great job, Jim Sciutto.
And this is a book that he's writing called The Return of Great Powers, Russia, China, and the Next World War. And there were various members of Donald Trump's cabinet that gave interviews, including John Kelly. And John Kelly, I'm just going to read from this. This is things that John Kelly told Jim Sciutto in the course of the reporting for the book. Quote, Trump allegedly reserved some of his most unnerving praise for Hitler, who led Nazi Germany during World War II. Quote, he said, well, but Hitler did some good things.
Ugh.
I said, well, what? And he said, well, Hitler rebuilt the economy. But what did he do with that rebuilt economy? He turned it against his own people and against the world. And I said, sir, you can never say anything good about the guy. Nothing, Kelly recounted. Quote, I mean, Mussolini was a great guy in comparison. It's pretty hard to believe he missed the Holocaust, though, and pretty hard to understand how he missed the 400,000 American GIs that were killed in the European theater, Kelly told me. But I think it's more, again, the tough guy thing. Trump's admiration for Hitler, okay, are we hearing these words?
Yeah.
Trump's admiration for Hitler went further than the Germany leader's economic policies, according to Kelly. Trump also expressed admiration for Hitler's hold on senior Nazi officers.
Yeah.
Are you guys noticing a theme here? Trump lamented that Hitler, as Kelly recounted, maintained his senior staff's, quote, loyalty, while Trump himself often did not. Quote, he would ask about the loyalty issues and about how when I pointed out to him the German generals as a group were not loyal to him and in fact tried to assassinate him a few times, and he didn't know that, Kelly recalled.
Shocker that Donald Trump doesn't have a fulsome understanding of history.
Quote, he truly believed when he brought us generals in that they would be loyal, that we would do anything he wanted us to do, Kelly told me. When asked to respond to the allegations from the former Trump administration officials, Trump campaign spokesman Stephen Chung did not comment on the substance of what they told me, but stated, quote, John Kelly and John Bolton have completely beclowned themselves and are suffering from a severe case of Trump derangement syndrome. They need to seek professional help because their hatred is consuming their empty lives.
Yeah, you know, when Donald Trump said, I'm going to put the best people around me, and then he chooses these people, and then they weren't the best people. Oh, no. What happened, Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm.
Also, John Kelly is not some saint, a former Marine four-star general, but also presided over the family separation policy of Donald Trump gleefully, by any account. So it's not like he's some bleeding heart liberal who's just against Donald Trump. He's a conservative. He was there to serve at the behest of Donald Trump. And he couldn't take it anymore, I guess, for whatever reason.
Yeah, and according to this reporting, too, John Kelly said that Donald Trump likes dictators so much because it's the way that he would govern if possible.
Yes.
And that he was essentially shocked when he got elected that he was constrained by Congress and that he didn't have unlimited powers. And so, again, if you're hearing the themes in this conversation, and I hope that you are, Donald Trump is going to learn from the mistakes of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And like Viktor Orban, who has managed to keep himself in office, Donald Trump will do that too.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's hyperbolic. I do not think it's a conspiracy theory. I think all of the evidence is right in front of us. And that's why this election is so important.
We'd love to know what you think. 657-464-7609 is our voicemail, at which you can leave a brief voicemail. You can also email us daily@dollamore.com.
So we also came across this clip over the weekend of CNN reporter Clarissa Ward, who often travels and does a lot of the on-the-ground reporting, including during war.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on the ground at the Gaza border, where she interviewed some Israeli protesters who are standing in the way of aid getting in.
Right. They're not protesting the war itself. They're not protesting the atrocities of the war. They're not protesting the 30,000 plus dead civilians in this conflict. They're protesting humanitarian aid being delivered to a starving to death population.
And if you're wondering, again, just coming out of this conversation about Donald Trump and his love of autocrats, what would be happening, how this would be different, because of course Donald Trump doesn't want any aid to go to Ukraine. He doesn't care about what happens to Ukraine.
Right.
He wants to side with Putin.
I would encourage him to do whatever the hell he wants to his adversaries.
Right, because he fundamentally doesn't care about democracy. And so we know what Donald Trump's position would be on this, and he would not have compassion for Palestinians.
Right.
He would not have compassion for Gaza.
Well, he's already said he would encourage them to finish the job.
Right. And not only would he not have compassion, because some people might be listening to this and thinking, well, Biden hasn't done enough. And while I agree,
yeah,
what we can do with Biden is persuade him.
Right. He can be cajoled. He can be pressured. Like, it is happening right fucking now.
Right.
Whether that be through the facts on the ground and the unavoidable realities that are taking place, or electoral pressure.
Right.
Either way, our way will come around. Too late? Yes, absolutely too late. Maybe not too late, but certainly later than we would like.
Yeah, too late. So this is Clarissa Ward on the ground with her reporting.
Under international law, it's Israel's obligation to make sure that the ordinary citizens of Gaza don't starve to death. And right now they are starving to death.
Hamas is making it very difficult because Hamas is not allowing this to arrive. They're not holding it. They're not receiving it. But they do it. I'm telling you here and now. If we knew it's getting to children of Gaza, we would do it. This does not arrive at the doorstep. This arrives into the tunnels of Hamas that are fighting us and holding our hostages.
No evidence to support the idea that all of this aid is going to Hamas.
Not to the rest of the population. This is intelligence only for terror. That's why they're getting, they should get only the minimum calories required to survive.
They're starving to death.
They are not
starving. They are starving to death.
You know what? If they are starving to death, give us back, give the hostages back. No, a single a loaf of bread should go there till our hostages are coming back.
To many people in the world, listening to what you're saying and what you're protesting for, it sounds like a contravention of international law, and B, incredibly callous in the face of an epic humanitarian catastrophe, in the face of children starving to death. People can't understand why anyone in their right mind would advocate for stopping aid.
Hamas has no fair play. Hamas has no rules. Hamas is holding civilians.
You know, even if there is a humanitarian crisis, and there is not, even if there is, it's my right and my duty to prioritize the life of Kfir Bibas, a one-year-old baby that is there, over any Gazan baby.
This is fucking monstrous. She's saying, multiple of these people are saying, well, they should give our hostages back. Not one loaf of bread should go. That those starving babies and starving to death, and this segment went on where they actually went to the hospital and you see emaciated children who are withering and dying of starvation. That if those babies who are starving to death and the toddlers who are starving to death and the children who are starving to death, if they wanted to eat, then those toddlers, babies, and children should release the hostages. What? It's like we've been saying from the beginning that the Netanyahu government is no different than the Hungarian government, than the Russian government. They are a threat to world security and to human rights and need to be dealt with. And every single dollar that we give them, we as Americans, as taxpayers, are complicit in this. It's the way it is. And through democracy, through electoral pressure, we need to force Biden to do that which he hasn't done up to this point, using our power as voters, as citizens of the United States.
Well, and what's strange about this, and I know it's just an emotional issue for the Israeli protesters that Clarissa Ward was interviewing there, but I'm always curious about people who make this argument of if they just release the hostages, like what is their perspective on how the Israelis killed three of their own hostages who were waving a white flag?
Yeah.
The war is also inherently dangerous for the hostages. Mm-hmm. Especially if the Israeli soldiers are going to be killing people who are waving white flags that end up being their own hostages. And I never hear this question be asked of people who make this argument, because it seems like that would be an important point to bring up.
Well, they want it both ways relative to what Hamas is. They want to negotiate. They want Hamas to come to the negotiating table. But also, Hamas are brutal, animalistic fucking terrorists, which is true. That is true. So you're not going to get them to act rationally or decently.
Yeah.
You need to be the better group of people and not allow children and babies to fucking starve to death.
I saw this when Bernie Sanders recently made an appearance on CBS Sunday Mornings, or CBS This Mornings, and Tony Coppoli, one of the hosts, when Bernie Sanders was calling for a ceasefire, Tony Coppoli said, and what about Hamas? Every time you leftists, whatever, talk about a ceasefire, why is it that you don't immediately followed that up with, and release the hostages. And Bernie Sanders was kind of annoyed by the question, you could tell. And he said, yeah, of course, release the hostages. Hamas, are you listening? Release the hostages. And it brought up a good point where the same people who will say that Hamas are animals, they are vermin, they are not even human, right? They talk about them like they are so evil that they need to be eradicated, to the point where they're fine killing any number of innocents just so that Hamas in this evil can be wiped out. And yet they will stand there and say, Bernie Sanders, convince Hamas,
right.
These evil animals, by their own admission, right? That's what they say about them. Convince them to release the hostages. And it's like, well, how am I supposed to negotiate with people that you yourself are calling animals, vermin, capable of such evil? They're not going to listen to Bernie Sanders. They're not going to listen to people making these pleas.
I don't understand the people who are making those arguments that you're talking about right now. Like, in the wake of 9/11, if we had gone into Afghanistan or Pakistan and we had said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to start bombing daycares, and there will be 10, 15,000 dead children until Al-Qaeda turn themselves in. America would have been fucking outraged. Like, what? This is not a wartime strategy. You take the fight to the actual enemy. You don't target collateral damage. It's not even collateral damage. They're targeting women and children and sick people in hospitals. It's not collateral when they're the objective. It is fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway, we'll get to taking care of biz, but we would invite your participation. Further communication about this topic, 657-464-7609. And of course, you can always email a voice memo from your regular old smartphone to your regular old email address. idoubtit@dollamore.com.
Taking care of biz. Lisa Kanarek.
Lisa Kanarek.
And David Begnaud. And also, I can't remember the name of the dog. Gaia, I think.
I think it was Gaia. G-A-I-A.
Yeah, Gaia.
You tweeted it and I clicked the article.
Yeah, so this is a really lovely story. There's a CBS correspondent, David Begnaud, and he does a lot of these kind of, I don't know, personal stories, human interest, is that what you call them? I don't know. Feel good, moving, emotional. He does a lot of these stories and they're usually really good, and this one is the same. It was actually a woman who wrote an essay in the Washington Post about how she had a neighbor that she didn't know very well, had only met like two times and never really took the time to get to know. But she ended up adopting this woman's dog when she passed, and this is the story of that journey that she took with this dog.
Meet Gaia, a husky with a story to tell about how when one life ends, sometimes an even better one begins. In Dallas, Texas, Gaia's life was confined to that tiny backyard. That's because her loyal owner, Sandra, was hospitalized. The next-door neighbor, Lisa Kanarek, noticed that the 9-year-old female looked lonely. So she offered to walk her.
I walked in, and then Gaia came up to me very slowly. And then I said, oh, hi. And then what's your name? So I had to look down at her tag and saw it was Gaia.
One walk turned into 3 weeks of walks.
Come down here.
And then one question Lisa was not expecting from Sandra's dear friend, Gilda Levy.
2 weeks before Sandra died, she said, I don't know if you've thought about this, but would you like to take her?
And what did you say?
Sure, I would love to.
So when the time came, Lisa was summoned to Sandra's home right next door. The 80-year-old neighbor she barely knew was gone.
She had just died, so I just clipped her leash on, and then I said, okay, goodbye.
She walked Gaia from Sandra's home into hers. And from that moment on, Gaia's life changed.
Good girl. Good girl.
Lisa wanted to get Gaia out more. And she noticed on walks around the neighborhood that Gaia was so calm around children. So she and Gaia enrolled in and passed a pet therapy program.
I can tell when I put on her vest, she's ready to go.
Their first assignment was Children's Medical Center Dallas. So here was an elderly dog who rarely ever left Sandra's home, now finding a home with Lisa and in the hearts of these young children.
Dogs are like the best thing that ever happened to me, like in this hospital.
You're missing some more, Gaia.
Oh, wait, there's more. Lisa thought the piercing blue-eyed beauty would be just right for another kind of therapy. Hospice. It just so happened that when Gaia's owner died, Lisa was finishing her training to be an end-of-life doula.
You're pretty good to have around.
Today, she and Gaia minister to the terminally ill.
You are precious.
Good morning.
Wow, what a beautiful dog.
Aw, thank you.
Hi.
Are you doing all this for Gaia or for you?
Oh, that is a good question. I think that I... That's a good question. Let me think about that. I think I'm doing this for both of us. I think it benefits both of us. She gets to go out and see people, and I get to see the response that she gets when she's out. There's just nothing better than that.
Two things. We always do this. I fucking love good people, and I love dogs.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? There's the people say it all the time that we're not worthy of the loyalty and the just absolute unconditional love that are given by dogs. Man, it's so true.
Yeah. So Lisa Kanarek wrote in this Washington Post article, I just want to read the last paragraph. Adopting my neighbor's dog has allowed me the opportunity to pay it forward in ways I've never expected before. As we pass through the halls at the Children's Hospital, I think of Sandra and hope she's smiling, knowing how much joy Gaia brings to everyone she meets. And I love this story because it's paying it forward, it's continuing to spread positivity, and having worked in psychiatric hospitals where they had pet therapy, there would be a dog that would come around, and there was also a bird, but the dog was more popular than the bird. And unless you've seen it happen in hospitals when a dog walks on to a unit, it's hard to describe
how people just light up.
It is, I mean, it's just like a bright light has entered the unit, and everyone is smiling, and everyone is excited, and everyone is eager to pet the dog. And It only lasts for a few minutes, but it means so much to people, and it's just a gift to be able to give this to people, whether it's kids or whether it's people that are at the end of their lives. So, beautiful story, and we hope that brought you some positivity at the end of this episode.
Yeah, we'll end this 10-year anniversary episode, episode 907, the way we have so many episodes with you and I both crying.
We cry a lot, you guys.
Yeah, we do. Anyway, we'll end it there before it gets out of control. We love and appreciate you guys. Thanks so much for sticking around as long as you have. If you're new to the show, thank you. If you've been around for nearly 10 years, thank you. You're all very important, and we appreciate the community that is built up around this show so much. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollimore, and this has been I Doubt It. We'll be right back.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.